The Independent Audit Committee was established by charter and receives audit reports and other information from the Denver Audit Office. The committee strives to bring greater clarity, transparency, and accountability to Denver's city government and its residents. It is also responsible for commissioning an annual audit of the city's annual comprehensive financial report. This committee is chaired by Auditor Timothy M. O'Brien.
I'd like to call the Independent Audit Committee to order for Thursday, March the 20th. Amy, would you be kind enough to call the roll?
Absolutely. Jack Lindenthal.
Here.
Lorene Nath.
Here.
Leslie Mitchell.
Here.
Meg Rowe.
Here.
Reed Hatch.
Here.
Here. All right. Next item on our agenda is approval of the February meeting minutes. The minutes are in order. Is there a motion to approve?
I so move.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Follow-up report on the homeless encampments. I'd like to welcome Evan and your team. Morris, would you like to introduce yourself and your team? And then I'll give you guys an opportunity to have any opening remarks.
Absolutely. Good morning, Auditor members. My name is Cara Sepstein, and I was the manager for the homeless encampment follow-up that we're presenting this morning. I'm joined at the table by Isabel Pupa, lead auditor, and senior auditors Dan O'Connor and Danielle Edwards. I'd like to extend my thanks to the team, on behalf of the team, to the Mayor's Office, City Attorney's Office, Department of Transportation and Infrastructure, Parks and Recreation, Public Health and Environment, and Housing Stability, who are so quick to respond to our requests. Similar to the original audit, it was a pleasure to work with you all on such an important topic.
Thank you, Mr. Auditor, members of the Audit Committee. My name is Evan Dreyer. I'm Deputy Chief of Staff in the Mayor's Office. Also want to extend our gratitude and thanks for the spirit in which the original audit and the follow-up were conducted. Cole Chandler and I were just talking, and we'll let everybody introduce themselves. This is some of the most important work that we do as a city. We are engaging with people. Sometimes things are, policies and procedures are not always easy. They're not always put in place the way we would like them to be put in place. So we appreciate the time and the care that your team has given this particular time to help us help people. With that, we'll let Cole and the other two folks at the table introduce themselves, and then Cole has a little bit of an opening statement.
Yeah. Cole Chandler, Mayor's Office Senior Advisor on Homelessness.
Good morning. Andy Phelps, Director of Encampment Response.
Good morning. Nicholas Williams, Deputy Manager, Department of Transportation and Infrastructure.
Also, just want to acknowledge that we have lots of folks in the audience who work on this topic. People who are experiencing homelessness every single day. There's really not an agency in government that doesn't touch this topic in one way or another. And many of them are here.
Are you thinking they may need to provide some information?
Some might, yep.
Okay. You'll let them know or let me know?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, let's get started.
As described in the original audit report.
Can we take 1 second and let Cole?
I'm sorry, yes.
Okay.
You're good.
Yeah, so again, thank you so much for your work on this. Kara, it's been great to work with you and Mr. Auditor. I think for somebody who didn't work in the city when this initial audit was conducted, and somebody who had thought long and hard about how really our encampment response could be transformed as a city to better reflect, I think, our values as a community and also produce better outcomes for people on the streets and for neighborhoods. I'll just say when this audit report was initially released in early 2023, it was really a welcome addition to the conversation about how we could transform this response in our city. On the transition to the Johnson administration in the summer of 2023, this was something that was part and parcel of our conversation about how we really would transform encampment response. Ultimately for us, that came to life through the House 1000 initiative that we launched on mayor's first full day in office. We're proud of the work that we accomplished through that initial effort, and then proud of what we've set up through the All in Mile High initiative at this point. We really have transformed the city's response to encampments and really what life looks and feels like around street homelessness in Denver at this point. We've moved more than 3,000 people indoors. We've permanently closed more than 400 city blocks to encampments. And we've delivered the largest reduction in street homelessness in Denver's recorded history. And so we're proud of that progress. And yet, as you note in the findings from the report, there's still a lot for us to improve upon. And so grateful for the way that you've acknowledged how the response has transformed and also the ways that you've continued to guide us as we move forward. And so just want to note a couple of things that we'll be happy to talk more about. I think there's a few things that we had not implemented at the time of this report that we have continued to make progress on even since this report was filed. One of those is related to record keeping and data. We obviously have long conducted daily coordination meetings around this topic as a city, but even since the report concluded, we've continued to take additional steps to monitor outreach and engagement data by location and ensure better tracking and record keeping from that. And so I think that's something we're happy about. In terms of storage, you know, the city has long worked to provide storage and assistance for people's personal belongings. Since the conclusion of the report, we've continued to review our policies and work to implement improvements to that. And then finally, with expense tracking, another item that's really important, continued to make progress on that since the conclusion of the report as well. And so, again, just want to express our gratitude. I think together we have transformed the way the city looks and feels and produced better outcomes that are more closely aligned to our values. So thank you all.
Well, I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much. You know, one of the purposes of the audit is to help you do your job better. So thank you for, I think that's what a lot of your comments were about. So why don't we get started and...
Sorry, I knew you wanted to speak. Got excited. Okay, all right. As described in the original audit report, the federal government defines homelessness as a person or family who lacks fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence. They may be sheltered in temporary living in a publicly or privately operated shelter or in another facility such as a hotel. They may be unsheltered, living in areas not meant to be lived in, such as a car, park, or an abandoned building. The sheltered status of a person can and does change quickly and often. As shown on the slide, there were 10 different agencies responsible for encampment response at the time of our audit. These city departments coordinate to enforce city ordinances and comply with a legal settlement, provide outreach and connections to services to people experiencing homelessness, conduct assessments to identify public health, safety, and environmental risks, and clean up areas with encampments as needed and store people's personal property. In August 2016, the City and County of Denver was sued over an alleged practice of how it cleaned an encampment of multiple people experiencing homelessness by immediately seizing and throwing away property found. The plaintiffs, including Raymond Lyle, argued that the city violated people's rights by taking away personal property without due process. This resulted in a settlement agreement in February of 2019. The agreement requires the city to adhere to a number of things related to cleanups, personal property, communications, and training. As Cole mentioned, and at the beginning of our follow-up last October, leaders in the mayor's office told us that the way that the city responds to encampments under the new has changed under the new administration. The focus has shifted to moving people into housing under a new program called All in Mile High. And as such, the unauthorized encampment response program and associated draft program management plan that we reviewed as part of the original audit no longer exist. However, we still reviewed the recommendations completed by the mayor's office and city related to compliance, data, communications, and expenses. As outlined on the highlights page of the follow-up report, the objective of our audit was to determine the extent the city's current processes for encampment enforcement and providing services were effective, compliant with laws, and equitable, to assess whether the city effectively designed the homeless encampment response program to achieve its mission, goals, and responsibilities, and to evaluate the extent the city was tracking expenses related to encampments and monitoring its contractors. For the scope of the original audit, in addition to compliance and expense tracking documentation and data, we reviewed the city's services and communications to determine if the city was providing both equitably to people living in encampments encampment-related data to see if it was reliable and could be used by the city to conduct meaningful analyses on program effectiveness, and the city's homelessness encampment response program and existing processes compared with leading practices in other cities. The original audit included a review of documentation and data from January 1, 2019 through June 30, 2022. Also shown on the highlights page of the follow-up report, the April audit had four main findings. First, we found the city lacked sufficient procedures and reliable data to ensure people experiencing homelessness who lived in unauthorized encampments were treated equally and lawfully. We also found the city was not tracking expenses related to homeless encampments or sufficiently monitoring its invoices and contract performance. Further, a draft city plan needed improvement to effectively guide city agencies in their responsibilities over unauthorized encampments. And finally, the city's encampment response program may not have been appropriately staffed to achieve its goals and objectives. We made 36 recommendations in the original audit. The city and departments have fully implemented six of these and partially implemented another 11. The departments have yet to implement the remaining 11, and we did not review eight related to the unauthorized encampment response program and the associated draft plan. However, as mentioned, the mayor's office has continued to send us documentation since December, showing us that the city continues to work on the recommendations not implemented. Before we get into the specifics, I'd like to open the floor for any questions or comments.
Any questions from the committee? All right, let's go.
All right, finding one was that the city lacked sufficient procedures and reliable data to ensure people experiencing homelessness who lived in unauthorized encampments were treated equitably and lawfully. And it had two subfindings. Our first subfinding for finding one by italics, one, mostly but not fully compliant with the Lyle settlement. As illustrated on page one in the slide, the city fully implemented recommendations to establish and document roles and responsibilities, and also develop and document policies and procedures for providing notice at regular cleanups. It partially implemented the recommendations to develop and document policies and procedures for both property storage compliance as well as property storage data. It did not implement the recommendation, however, to monitor property storage data. Further, the city fully implemented recommendations to develop and document employee training policies and procedures, to follow the city's records retention policy, and update the city's webpage. It partially implemented the recommendation to monitor compliance on employee training. Most notably, the mayor's office created a policy document that outlines requirements for property storage, data, communications, and the city's website. The policy was reviewed and approved by the city's city attorney's office to ensure that it aligned with the settlement. Now the city can demonstrate compliance with some of the settlement agreements, such as the requirements related to employee training. The policies related to property storage and associated data are also thorough and align with the settlement and assign responsibility for storing property and property destruction to the contractor Environmental Hazmat Services. Additionally, the city's webpage was updated to include all information as required by the settlement. This will aid people experiencing homelessness in retrieving their belongings by providing key information about the storage facility, as well as where and when items were found and collected. However, while the policy itself is well thought out and thorough, we found issues with its implementation. For example, property storage inventory was missing dates that property storage was allowed to be thrown away or is actually thrown away. And we found inventory forms did not always have the required information outlined in the policy. Risks, therefore, still remain that the city can ensure that the contractor, Environmental Hazmat Services, is adhering to requirements related to the property storage facility, and that the city cannot use the data tracked by the contract to verify the city is storing belongings as long as it should be. Further, if the city is not validating the training records for the contractor, it cannot ensure that all staff and all contractors interacting with people experiencing homelessness have been appropriately trained. And I will now open up for questions and comments before turning it over to Isabel.
Can you go back to the page that shows the recommendations and their status?
Yes.
Would you like to comment on any of these? I mean, you said you've been working on this, even though we stopped the follow-up audit in December. Any of these further along than we may be indicating here?
You want to share about 1.3?
Sure, I can speak to probably 1.2 and 1.3 in combination. Again, Nick Williams, Stoddy, on that. So just kind of for a little background on how storage works under our program, we have two locations. One is relatively centrally located downtown, cited to be as convenient as possible based on real estate, all of that on there. And then a secondary site. The Lyle settlement requires us to keep property collected at that first site for 30 days, after which we then do keep it longer and have that secondary site for that. As a practice, we typically keep property in that initial site longer than 30 days. And that is, and we talk about this in some of the other areas, we want to make sure that if and when people come to pick their things up, it's most accessible. If it's at that secondary location, it requires a special trip to go. That is not publicly accessible. Our team or EHS's team brings that over on there. And so what I think we have is a regular practice that in fact very much aligns with Lyle settlement. But I think what we've really appreciated from this and are working to really memorialize is we have data that goes back and forth between us and EHS on this. It can be as simple as adding a field on, this is when it is eligible on there. I am confident because each of the bins that contain belongings are marked by date on there. And so that is reviewed when it's going over. But I think our opportunity here and what we're gonna work on here to complete this one is to first kind of memorialize that, add a field in, what goes back and forth, and then take that next step. You know, I think processes and procedures are really most valuable when you have turnover on there. I'm very confident in our current team's compliance with this, but I think adding that, it's for the next generation, the next generation, the next generation on there. So I think just in summary on this, I think in regular practice, we're doing what it is, but I think what this is really illustrated is, let's put some formal structures around it to absolutely make sure.
Thank you. Can you go to the next page? Yeah.
I've got one quick question. Yeah. So just real quickly and like this, what percentage of the property, you know, that you put into the initial storage for the 30 plus days, what percentage of the people roughly pick things up during that time frame?
Thank you for the question. Significantly low. I would say 10% is a very generous, I would say most likely single digit percentage of what is stored is picked up on there. Very low.
Thank you.
Okay.
You wanted the next slide, correct?
Yeah. Anything to report since we completed the follow-up on these?
Question.
I think one thing that we didn't note that they are working on is giving the contractor access to Workday. I think that will help them track the compliance with the training that's being provided. That was in process, I think, in December. I don't know if it's further along, but.
Paul can answer that.
Okay.
Paul?
Could you give a little bit more info on that, the progress on getting EHS and Workday?
Sure. So my name is Paul Bedard, manager in the Department of Public Health and Environment, run my quality division. I'm the contract manager for EHS for these services. Last year, I proposed that perhaps a way for consistent tracking of employee training for EHS staff, which are largely the laborers that work with Dottie in the field, would be to bring them on as contingent workers under the Workday process. I've been slow and my colleagues have been slow in implementing that for various reasons. Turned out to be more complicated than it sounds. And there are many people have to touch the process. I have continued to address it with folks who help me make that work. Recently got a confirmation email from the officers of Environmental Hazmat Services providing a revised list of their employees and have started that process once again. However, it's important to understand that this essentially just puts records in Workday. It's not necessarily a way of validating. And so I'm happy to work with others to work with the contractor to figure out ways to kind of validate when there's an individual with EHS in the field. How we can quickly acknowledge that person has received training.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just backing up on the storage, with the new work to move people directly to housing or to housing, not directly, does that change how storage is handled? Do belongings follow someone to their residence, or is it an interim period? It's more on that.
Sure, sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. For Dottie and how we engage with EHS on that, it would not change. So the storage requirements, all of that. I'll defer to Cole on the actual day of events. Of course, that's a different experience on that. Dottie, really, we come in once folks are out, and so property that has said, we would like to put this in storage, similar to what we would do with any sort of encampment cleanup and have done on that. But as far as the requirements and how we go about doing that and how long we store it, that doesn't change.
Yeah, so when folks are moving indoors to the non-congregate shelters, they're allowed to bring basically two large bags full of their possessions. There may be additional items then that they would choose to store. However, for the most part, they're able to bring their most important possessions with them when they move indoors.
Thanks.
We've moved 3,000 people indoors.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, 10%, less than 10% of their belongings haven't moved indoors with them.
So I think what Nick was answering was when folks maybe don't move indoors with their belongings, right? They are unlikely to return to go pick those up. And so most of the time, the items that are being stored, people are not calling or not coming back to reclaim those. Okay. We're making it an option for folks. However, sure. It's not often being opted into.
Are there, clothing for them at the shelters and
yes,
things
sir.
Like that? Okay. I get it. Isabel?
Our second sub-finding, for finding one, noted by the italics on page 7 of the report, states that the city cannot ensure equitable access to services or store personal belongings for people experiencing homelessness. As shown on the slide, the mayor's office fully implemented our recommendation to continue developing a centralized data tracking method. The agencies and departments also partially implemented our recommendations to implement and identify a consistent method for location tracking, and develop policies and procedures for outreach data and cleanups and assessments data. They did not implement the recommendations to monitor outreach data or monitor cleanup and assessments data. Additionally, the department partially implemented our recommendations to document the long-term storage property storage process, provide equitable access to information, and provide consistent communication. It did not implement the recommendation to conduct a needs assessment. Mayor's office staff identified a central database for encampment response teams to track their data and said it is expected to launch in May 2025. Documentation showed that this database will track locations, encampment status, outreach efforts, and support services. By identifying and working towards the system, the response teams will improve their data consistency, accuracy, and reliability. In the meantime, a few agencies had policies and procedures for their outreach teams and assessments. These policies covered data input, tracking, and monitoring, including how to track locations, services provided, and demographic information. These policies helped to increase the overall quality of data, including its consistency and reliability, entered by the program teams. The mayor's office created a policy that outlines the process for property being moved to the long-term storage facility. As mentioned, this policy was reviewed by the city attorney's office to help ensure compliance with legal requirements. The city also updated its notices to include Spanish, which helps increase access to information for people with limited English proficiency. Similarly, the city added how long the property will be kept at the storage facilities, which provides greater transparency to people on how long their belongings will be available for pickup. Because the centralized database was not yet implemented, agencies still use separate location and cleanup data tracking methods, and some do not have policies and procedures for these processes. Without consistent data tracking methods and policies, agencies cannot ensure that their data is being tracked accurately and consistently across different team members. Mayor's office staff said they meet with encampment response teams daily and they review cleanup and assessments data, but they did not document their reviews or have a policy or procedure on doing so. without having a periodic and formalized review process for data accuracy. The mayor's office cannot ensure that the data it receives from the encampment response teams is accurate and reliable to use for decision-making and evaluating trends. While the mayor's office created a policy that discusses the storage facility processes, we found that the contractor was not following the policy, which prevents the city from ensuring that it is compliant with legal requirements. The mayor's office did not conduct a needs assessment to determine if the storage facility location and hours allow for equitable access for people to pick up their belongings. The office said that it is complying with the settlement regarding opening hours. However, the agreement also allows the city to make changes as long as those changes are documented. City staff said it relies on verbal communication and 311 for people with disabilities and did not identify if the notices should be provided in any other languages. This may prevent people who are not present at the time of a verbal notice and those without access to phones from receiving information. Similarly, although the notices had been updated, they did not include information about how people may have to visit the main storage facility more than once if their property was moved to that different site, which prevents full transparency into the process and was required by our recommendation. I will now open the floor for questions and comments before I turn it over to Dan to present our next finding.
If we could go back to the page with all the recommendations, I'll ask Governor Cole. Anything to add since we completed the fieldwork?
Yeah, I'd like to comment on recommendations 1.13 and 1.15, monitor outreach data and monitor cleanup and assessment data. So as we stated in our response, we do meet daily with all the teams that are involved with encampment response. We also get end-of-day reports from all the teams that are involved. But I wanted to note that over the last 8 months, we've been working to develop an encampment response software solution utilizing Salesforce. We've been working with all the city agencies involved with encampment response, TS, and even Peak Academy has been assisting us. And I feel very optimistic that this coming software solution that should launch in May of this year will really help us because it will get all the data into one place. One of the things we're up against right now is we have lots of city teams doing amazing work right now, but they're all kind of recording in separate areas, which makes it difficult to have line of sight in one place. So this software is going to do a couple of things. It's going to get all the encampment response, cleanup, outreach activity into one software so we can pull reports from that one software. It's going to give city leadership line of sight on exactly what's happening in our encampments throughout the city. And another part of the software that I'm excited about personally is that it's going to create a positive feedback loop to the community. So that if a person puts in a complaint via 311, they will now be notified when action was taken on that encampment.
All right, Florine.
Could you talk a little bit about what is an encampment? I mean, I think we all know that when there's multiple people with tents and that's an encampment, but is an encampment include one individual with a shopping cart sleeping in an alley or and then what is the approach when you encounter homelessness? Do you?
Can I give a little bit of context first and then?
Yeah.
So the original audit period was January 2019 through June of 2022. And remember, we had COVID in there too. At some point during the original audit period, we were conducting as a city probably three times a week large encampment cleanups, also known as sweeps. Because we have now totally changed the approach, when was the last time we did a large encampment cleanup?
Almost a year. It's been a long time.
So three a week to none this year.
Yeah, April of last year was the last one.
400 city blocks that at one point had large encampments or encampments no longer have encampments. 3,000 people brought indoors. It's a complete sea change in the city's approach. So that partially answers your question, but I think that Cole and Andy probably have a more answer too. Today, what is an encampment?
Yeah, so I think it was really easy to define it at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And when we came in, it was, you know, the line of tents surrounding the post office, right? At this point, when we're talking about encampments, we're talking about anything that's coded as an encampment through our 311 system, which is basically somebody reporting on potentially the shopping cart in the alleyway or the single tent here and there. That comes up as an encampment-related complaint in our 311 system, and then that elevates to us, and we prioritize it for response. So basically, we're talking about anyone potentially experiencing homelessness that is we're notified about through our 311 system or through other methods. And so that's evolved over time.
So when you encounter that and you encourage them to come inside, mm-hmm. how forceful is that done? Or yeah. they can choose to not go with you, right?
I don't think it's forceful would not be the word that I would use, definitely. You know, we have outreach teams out there working with people, building rapport with people and trying to encourage them to get into services. But even our law enforcement who is present today, they always offer services as a first step whenever they're doing any kind of an advisement on an ordinance that's related to encampments. So we're always offering services at the front end.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've got a couple questions, Evan. You know, when we were looking at, you know, the whole question of homelessness, housing and all that, the rough expenditure on that was about $150 million. It was a few meetings ago when we got into it. And, you know, it's like, you know, we have rolling issues, you know, now it's, you know, all about ICE and all this other stuff. Just to put this in perspective, financially, because we've got, you know, budgetary issues. If it's $150 million for the housing side, how many dollars are we talking about, roughly, would you guess, is going out, you know, for the encampment issue? And then the second question I've got is, and I think it's great that you guys have, the problem has really gone down quite a bit. Is this a problem that has come and gone for the most part, as you see it, because of whatever the effects are on the outside or not? Just to put this in perspective a little.
This homelessness is absolutely still a top issue, not just for this city, but for the entire country.
Yeah.
Without a question. So I don't think this is a come and gone kind of issue. On the cost front, I think one of your findings is that we need to do a better job of tracking costs. But I would say you make it, your underlying point is an excellent one. We spend far more money, taxpayer dollars, providing services, sheltering and housing people than we do on the cleanup or actual encampment response, probably by, we spend an order of magnitude of 10, at least, on the housing and services side of things.
Yeah, and that, I was looking for that perspective. Thank you.
From what you've said, we're not spending much on encampments, right?
Certainly not large encampments because they don't exist anymore, but there are still plenty of people who are living on the streets, unsheltered, that we are trying to connect them to indoor alternatives every day.
So I think that goes to Florine's question, what's the definition of an encampment?
Yeah, and I think at this point, we're defining it as anyone that's staying up.
Thank you.
I have a question about the role of the city and contractors, you know, and some of this gets into the expenses too, but just provide me kind of an overview on when is it a city employee or, you know, a government employee, and when are you using contractors? Kind of where's the law comes?
Sure.
Yeah.
So we most commonly contract with EHS. I think we've talked about that, and you see that through here a lot. Dottie's role in the encampment cleanup process is to quite literally clean up the encampment after everyone has moved out, to collect storage, then to store it on there. And so we very much minimize the interaction of contractors, EHS employees, with the folks inside of the encampment on there, and that is just our responsibility on there. They basically, at the time of the encampment, they are acting as documenting what is being provided to be put into storage on there. Then EHS operates the facility that houses that equipment, basically an administrative role on there. Additionally, EHS's H is hazardous. On there, they pick up the hazardous waste. So there is anything hazardous, needles, things of that nature. Our staff does not pick that up. EHS is specifically contracted to pick up those items there. And that's not just for encampment cleanup. That is, we won't get into the full umbrella of the contract with them, but that is basically their role. But as I've said, really we have minimized as much as possible their interaction with folks. And so they're basically doing kind of the administrative documentation, storage, that, and then of course the hazardous waste pickup.
So when someone goes to pick up their stuff, they're dealing with EHS?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Dan?
Finding 2 states the city is not tracking expenses related to homeless encampments or sufficiently monitoring invoices and contract performance. As shown on this slide and in the report on page 16, the department partially implemented a recommendation to develop an expense tracking method. However, it did not implement recommendations to identify which expenses to track, to develop and document policies and procedures for tracking those expenses, or to establish oversight and create policies and procedures for invoice review and approval. Additionally, while it partially implemented a recommendation to follow the city's records retention policy, it did not implement recommendations related to establishing oversight and developing policies and procedures for contract and master purchase order monitoring, or for ensuring that security services are provided at the property storage facility as required in the Lyle settlement. Despite partially implementing 2 of the recommendations from this finding, several risks remain for the city and the agencies who are a part of the city's encampment response. First, as it relates to tracking its encampment-related spending, the city has not identified which expenses to track or provided agencies with documented procedures for tracking those expenses. Thus, the city cannot be fully transparent about its spending on encampment-related efforts or adequately assess whether it is spending money in the right areas. Additionally, the city and relevant agencies do not have responsible parties identified or uniform procedures for monitoring compliance with its contracts or the performance of the entities it contracts with. The review and approval of invoices, which is a significant part of contract monitoring, is inconsistent and sometimes ineffective across the various agencies. This could lead to the city paying for services that were not received and may complicate the city's efforts towards holding contractors accountable to the agreed upon work. And finally, the city could not provide all of the expense supporting documentation we requested. And we found that security services were not being provided at the property storage facility for all hours it was open. Security services are required by the Lyle settlement during all hours the storage facility is open, and expense documentation is crucial for both transparency and allowing the city to effectively monitor its response to encampments. I'll now pause for questions or comments before Danielle presents our last 2 findings.
Any progress on tracking expenses? I want to add that, you know, this question's been out there for years, and I'd like to see some progress on it myself. I mean, it's a question I get regularly in the community.
Sure. I would like to respond to recommendations 2.1, 2.2, and 2.3. We've done quite a bit of work on this. For the last 4 months, I set up a work group with all the agencies across the city that are involved with encampment response, or maybe a better term is homelessness response, and have had the pleasure of working with Bill Rydell, on coming to some solutions in regards to these recommendations. So we now have developed a workday tag, and we've trained all the city agencies on how to use it. So if there are any invoices related to homelessness response, they will now utilize a workday tag. So we can keep track of those expenses. We have also asked every city agency to let us know which of their staff are primarily assigned to a homelessness response. So we now can pull a report on that, which I will get quarterly now from Bill. So we've made progress on those three.
Any comments on the others?
Yeah, in regards to recommendations 2.4, 2.5, 2.6, and 2.7, unfortunately, we have not yet implemented these, but we thank you for the recommendations, and we will continue to work towards meeting those. We do have this work group that's already stood up, and I'm committed to continuing to work with that work group towards implementation of these recommendations.
Florine?
Well, I'm just a little confused. I would have thought that there was that by a matter of course it was that invoices would be approved by a you know, whatever authority was in charge of that particular contract or overseeing that service.
They are by agency, and I think the way we interpreted this recommendation was that it needed to be more centralized out of the mayor's office in this case.
Okay, all right, that makes more sense. Thank you. So glad somebody's approving the invoices.
So along that line, so what makes this issue so specific that it needs to go up food chain higher for approval? I guess
I think that's a question for your audit team.
Okay.
I think at the time of the original audit, several agencies were leveraging the same contractor, but only one agency was responsible for the contract itself. So it was hard for all of the, like for the person approving the invoice to know that the services had actually been provided. Yeah. That was part of the problem was that, as Evan mentioned, it was just so decentralized that there was just little assurance that services were being provided as required, but that the contractor was also performing per the contract.
And this is just EHS?
That was the main contractor. I think there was another Colorado Barrier company. We had a couple issues with theirs, but we didn't test that as part of the follow-up.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Danielle?
Thank you. I will go through the last two findings, which we did not review before opening up the floor for questions. As shown on page 21, finding 3 was the draft city plan needs improvement to effectively guide city agencies in their responsibilities over unauthorized contracts. As shown, we did not review recommendations related to documenting a program need, establishing timeline for goals, developing performance metrics goals, developing and documenting cleanup prioritization criteria, and updating and finalizing the draft program management plan. We did not review recommendations for monitoring program effectiveness or revising the program management plan as needed. The city changed its approach from responding to encampments and instead focused on moving people into housing under a new program known as All in Mile High, with the Auditor's Office scheduled to review the program in the future. Leaders in the mayor's office said the original program and draft management plan reviewed in the 2023 audit no longer exists. While the All in Mile High program is now in effect, many of the original risks may still be present if the city did not consider the recommendations made in the original audit. Finally, as shown on page 26, finding 4 was the city's encampment response program may not be appropriately staffed to achieve its goals and responsibilities. For the reasons mentioned in finding 3, we did not review the only recommendation for this finding, which was to conduct a staffing analysis. As such, we did not consider this recommendation when developing its new program. There may still be risks related to staffing.
So heads up.
So now you have your template.
Yeah. This one's on the exam.
New program.
This concludes our presentation of the homeless encampments follow-up. I would like to open the floor for any questions or comments from the agency or audit committee members.
Any comments on the last two findings?
We appreciate that and look forward to the ongoing dialogue about the I initiative.
Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah.
Isabel. I will see you again shortly.
I think on Tuesday, to be exact.
Yes, on Tuesday, exactly.
Tuesday's the doctor.
You know we're starting.
Right. Well, Chorus, I'm glad that you're not letting any grass grow.
I'm not in charge of that one, so I'm moving on to, oh.
Any closing comments?
Thank you again.
So I want to say I appreciate the spirit in which you've taken the audit report. I think it's provided you kind of a punch list in some ways to guide your operations. And as I think you said at the beginning, this is a very important problem that we want solved, if at all possible. Thanks for what you do every day.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
All right. Our next item is general business. Is there any general business to come before the committee? Seeing none, I'd like to adjourn into executive session. We've got an update from our independent auditor, Clifton Larson, CLA. And we have a So, if there's a motion to go into executive session, thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any objection to the motion? We're in executive session.
Independent Audit Committee was established by charter and receives audit reports and other information from the Denver Audit Office. The committee strives to bring greater clarity, transparency, and accountability to Denver's city government and its residents. It is also responsible for commissioning an annual audit of the city's annual comprehensive financial report. This committee is chaired by Auditor Timothy M. O'Brien.
The Independent Audit Committee to order for Thursday, March the 20th. Amy, would you be kind enough to call the roll?
Absolutely. Jack Lindenthal.
Here.
Lorene Nath.
Here.
Leslie Mitchell.
Here.
Meg Rowe.
Here.
Lee Hatch.
Here.
Here. Here. All right. Next item on our agenda is approval of the February meeting minutes. The minutes are in order. Is there a motion to approve?
I so move.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Follow-up report on the homeless encampments. I'd like to welcome Evan and your team. Maris, would you like to introduce yourself and your team? And then I'll give you guys an opportunity to have any opening remarks.
Absolutely. Good morning, Auditor members. My name is Cara Sepstein, and I was the manager for the homeless encampment follow-up that we're presenting this morning. I'm joined at the table by Isabel Pupa, lead auditor, and senior auditors Dan O'Connor and Danielle Edwards. I'd like to extend my thanks to the team, on behalf of the team, to the mayor's office, city attorney's office, Department of Transportation and Infrastructure, Parks and Recreation, Public Health and Environment, and Housing Stability, who are so quick to respond to our requests. Similar to the original audit, it was a pleasure to work with you all on such an important topic.
Thank you, Mr. Auditor, members of the Audit Committee. My name is Evan Dreyer. I'm Deputy Chief of Staff in the Mayor's Office. Also want to extend our gratitude and thanks for the spirit in which the original audit and the follow-up were conducted. Cole Chandler and I were just talking, and we'll let everybody introduce themselves, that This is some of the most important work that we do as a city. We are engaging with people. Sometimes things are, policies and procedures are not always easy. They're not always